but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
We had a pretty good discussion yesterday, a healthy discussion, a productive discussion yesterday about fan behavior at sporting events. NBA cracking down on bad fan behavior. I thought it was great. The calls were great. The conversation was smart. It was one of those times when, like, people give me crap and they go, oh, you host a sports radio show. And they kind of look at you like, you know, you're in charge of the toy factory or something. You work at the toy store. Oh, it's a sports radio show. Well, it was one of those moments where I was like, you know, we have something to add to society here on this show. We're part of the solution, not just part of the problem. Certainly, fan behavior has become a growing issue at stadiums, and we had some callers who called in yesterday who said, hey, this is about the loss of civility in society. And look at some of our societal leaders and how they treat other people. We had other people say, no. It begins and ends at the home. Parenting. If you don't raise your kids right, or kids don't get great examples of how to conduct themselves, or they don't learn how to act normal, so to speak, how can we expect them to act normal? It's true, if you don't give great nurturing to a kid, I don't know how much, you know, we can sit back and blame anything in society. That's the foundational stuff. Others yet pointed to the alcohol issue at the stadium and gambling, the rise of sports wagering in our sports world. The acceptance of sports wagering as being part of the problem. I think certainly those are external factors that contribute to the way people lose their minds. Social media, I think, is to blame as well. I've heard some people, you know, it's just the greatest irony. Like, I'm scrolling on TikTok. I'm doom scrolling at night. And I'm looking at Instagram. And I come upon somebody saying, doing an interview in like 60 Minutes, saying that social media is the downfall of society, that it's a cancer on our society, that it's a disease. And I'm literally on social media scrolling, and I become keenly aware. I kind of look around going, do they know I'm watching this on social media? All of these things are factors. I want to continue a little bit of that conversation off the top of the show, but then we got a great show today. A lot of guests. We are jam-packed. We're like an accordion today because we're leading you right into Thursday Night Football. And Dan Lanning will be on the show in the 4 o'clock hour at 4:20. Dan Lanning, Oregon football coach, 4:20. He got a little annoyed at a reporter yesterday in the news conference who wanted to talk about Indiana. Dan Lanning saying, you know, we talked about Indiana. We treat Indiana like Bruno around here. We don't talk about Bruno anymore. Here's that exchange.
But whether it was miscommunication or just really good defense on Indiana's part in terms of simulated pressures and causes confusion up front, Dan.
You guys know we're playing Rutgers, right? We did Monday press conference already. But go ahead.
But it's something that will come up again. So asking for Rutgers.
You watch Rutgers?
Not as heavy as simulated pressure. I'm saying in future games, starting this week and the rest of the season, mm-hmm. Where do you feel the corrections are this week to what happened last week?
We corrected them. Yeah, we corrected them on Monday. Any other Indiana questions? They played really good, guys. They played really good. They had a better plan than us, and we played that game last Saturday.
Dan Lanning, a little ornery, a little bit fiery. Will he continue that at 4:20 if I bring up some old stuff?
I was going to say, it depends if you talk about Indiana or not.
I'm going to, you know what I may do at the beginning of the interview?
Just troll him.
I may go, you know, I want to talk about something, and I'm not sure if it's okay to talk about it because we need to be looking forward here, but can we look back to last week? What went wrong against Indiana? Did they have a better plan? We'll see how he treats.
Was that the difference,
interview.
The game plan? You know, maybe they had a better plan than you did.
Kurt Cignetti getting an extension. Do you see that today, Stephen?
Cignetti did. Yeah, that's kind of the big extension. News. Big news of the day. The third. He's now the third highest paid college football coach in America.
Everybody went, that was a really impressive win. No, what Indiana did is what a lot of schools did is Indiana knows it's not like the football mecca. It's a basketball school. I covered IU.
But I've been around that school campus. Now, John, they're paying the third highest paid coach in all of America. That's kind of a football school, if you ask me.
It is. I think they're trying to say that they're a football school, but I think the bigger thing is Indiana's going, okay, who's going to have a vacancy? Penn State's going to have a vacancy. Who else is going to have a vacancy? Is Florida State going to end up with one if Mike Norvell doesn't beat Stanford? He will.
Florida.
Like there could be some landing spots for Cignetti. And so what the Hoosiers did is they said, okay, we're going to give him the money he wants. We're going to lock him in, $11.6 million per year. Nice raise. Cignetti made some money by beating the Oregon Ducks. Dan Lanning at 420. We'll see how feisty Dan Lanning gets. At 4 o'clock, it'll be Trent Walker, who's angry. Oregon State wide receiver. He gave interviews all week, which he expressed some anger over the firing of Trent Bray, his coach. And I understand it. It's complicated for players because, especially the guys that are performing well, like Trent Walker is this season, it has to be really hard because they're buying in. They're following. They are on board with what Trent Walker's doing. But Trent Bray was doing. Trent Walker coming up at 4 o'clock, I'll ask him, you know, what it was like. What was that moment like when he found out his coach was getting fired? Did he talk to Trent Bray afterwards? Why is he so angry? What is the anger about? Trent Walker will be here at 4 o'clock. So what I'm saying is if you are a college football fan and you want the goods, you can just settle in at 4 o'clock and listen to Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver. And then we'll go right into Dan Lanning at about 4:20, Oregon Duck football coach. And so we'll give you about 40 minutes there of really high quality conversation. Me talking to a player who's on a team who is now facing, a change at the head coach position. And then going right into Dan Lanning and poor Rutgers. Poor Rutgers. Do they know what they're in for? Like, if they didn't before, all they had to do is listen to Dan Lanning in that news conference. He was not happy. Guys, you know we're playing Rutgers this week. He wasn't happy having to relive that. I wouldn't call it. Would you say it was a tense moment? Or would you say it was, I thought it was a revealing moment where we just got to see a little bit of Lanning's frustration, which we don't normally see.
No, yeah. Usually he doesn't get mad about those questions. I think it was, tense. It was. I think it was just frustration. Like, he probably looked back at the film and said, look, we left some opportunities out there. They gave us opportunities. You know, the pick six, we had all the momentum, then we lose it, we just got pushed around. He's probably just frustrated, like, the entire week hearing about how good Indiana is now, how nobody expected him to go into Oregon, all that kind of stuff. That's probably all he's been hearing. So just to be reminded of that again, it's just like, look, man, I'm over it. Like, we're moving on. We're still in the playoff race. Like, we talked about that lots, John. Like, the loss, like, it matters, yeah, but they're still going to be in the college football playoff more than likely. So they just need to, like, forget that. And, like, in the NFL, you lose a game, you just put it behind you, and then you go forward.
Did they release a Ducks versus Them episode this week?
Not that I saw.
Is that interesting to you?
Like, every week it comes. I hate it.
Okay, you hate it. You don't like it.
I hate that they don't put it out there.
Okay.
It shows.
Because they lost.
Right, because it shows that they're just front runners. I feel like that.
So you want an episode even if they lose?
Yeah, I do. It's easy to talk a lot of trash and to troll people and to show your pregame speeches before the games when you win. Mm-hmm. It's easy to do that. Now, when you lose, don't act like you didn't have those. You don't think Dan Lanning had a theme all week? I guarantee you he had a theme against Indiana all week.
What do you think the theme was?
I have
control
no idea.
The line of scrimmage?
I have no idea because they didn't show it. They
We're going to show them who's boss.
They showed the theme against Penn State and then the Mo Bamba song they're playing all week. They didn't show anything mm-hmm. against Indiana. I don't know what it was. So I don't like that they don't do it. I feel like that is they should just put it out there because it is a part of their season. Like, if a Duck fans are really celebrating all year long, which they are, and it may turn out to be one of the best seasons of all time for Oregon, it's part of their story. Like, it's okay to lose a game. Like, we've established this in college football. You can
Wait. Is it okay to lose
a game? In college football, you can lose a game or two and still make the playoff, win the championship. Ohio State proved that.
Yeah. I don't like it either because I like when people win or lose show up. You know, we all have bad days. We all have days when we're not at our best. You can't hide out afterwards. You shouldn't hide out. I don't like that Oregon didn't put an episode out showing kind of the disappointment of it. But they've probably studied it. They've probably figured it out. I can tell you this, like after big games, you know, when Oregon beats Penn State and we come back on air or I write a column about it, there's tremendous amount of traffic, right? There's a tremendous amount of engagement. And in fact, if you look at the Ducks versus them episodes, by amount of viewership, you know, the game that they beat Oregon State had 57,000 views on their YouTube page. Then they beat Penn State, it had 231,000 views on their YouTube page. No other game is above 100,000 views in the first week that it was on. So, like, even if you go back and you look at Montana State, it's 53,000. Oklahoma State, it's 72,000. Northwestern's 36,000. The Oregon State game, 57,000. And then Penn State, 231,000. So they know they get a glow. And they know that they get extra engagement and extra eyeballs when they win. Have they studied it to the point where they go, it's not worth posting if we lose? Or is it that they don't want to talk about the loss and draw attention to it? If so, they may only have 10 or 11 episodes, or maybe 9. I don't know how many games they're going to win or lose this season. We're going to find out. But Mark Helfrich used to do this. It drove me crazy. He had this standing appointment to come on this show. I think it was every Tuesday. And whenever they lost, Helfrich would say, oh, I'm going to cancel today. And whenever they won, he came on and he took the victory lap. And it bothered me because the times I want to talk to him is after they lose a game. And what I like about Lanning, let's give him some credit here. They lost to Indiana last week. Not that I'm bringing it up. And he's coming on the show tomorrow.
Hopefully he wasn't listening to that comment.
Tomorrow. He's coming on the show today. I don't care if he hears it or not, you know?
I know.
He's
going
to deal with it. You know what he told me one time? This says a lot about him. Remember the Washington game at Husky Stadium where he made a bunch of questionable Riverboat Dan calls and he went for it on fourth
down.
Yeah,
it was like three or four times and missed all of them.
He missed them all. I saw him in the hallway after that game, right after that game. And he hadn't gone into his news conference yet. And he looked sick. He looked sick to his stomach. And I talked to him real briefly. And then I wrote a column and I was critical of him. And he later texted me and he said, you have a job to do. I appreciate that, you know, you do the job. And he understood the criticism was coming and he accepted that the criticism was coming. He sort of got it. And he said, I realize there will be times when, you know, you've got to call me out. And I appreciate that because there are times when you got to call somebody out and it's fair. You know, I grew up in a household with three other siblings. There's a time and a place to call each other out and be like, not happening. And there's a way to do it that's fair. And that's the thing that I really want to get to is, you know, I had Ann McCoy, the Washington State AD, talk to me and she said, you know, the thing that gets me is she says, you're so critical of all these characters that are around sports and in college and certainly in the Pac-12 and she said, and yet they all talk to you. Like, how do you balance that? How is that a thing? And I said to her, like, most people know when they're wrong or they've done something that's disappointing. We all know that when we've screwed up or you lost a game. It's on the scoreboard at Oregon as they're walking off the field. The difference is, can you be fair in your criticism? Can you make the person that you are calling out when you say Dan Lanning and the Oregon Ducks coaching staff, they got out coached? Are you being fair? Indiana had a better plan. Are you being fair? Indiana's players played harder. Are you being fair? I think all those things are fair. I think where it gets unfair is when it gets personal, when it gets cheap and chippy, when they know that you know, you're going to criticize them and then you're not going to show your face for a while because you're afraid of the confrontation. There's some media members out there that do that. It's a hit and run philosophy. You know, they'll show up and they'll write a, you know, a piece that's really damning about somebody, and then they'll you won't see them for like 2 weeks. I think your willingness to engage and deal with the real stuff is important. And I think Lanning, like Mario Cristobal and I had that thing. Like Mario Cristobal one time, they remember they played Washington at Washington, and Cristobal was the coach. And there was this big scene in the locker room where Cristobal had sort of called out Washington. Those guys, that's what they're about over there. And that video went viral. because Kayvon Thibodeau was live streaming during Mario Cristobal's postgame. Do you remember that? It was a few years ago at Husky Stadium.
Yeah, I do,
but,
yes.
Yeah, it wasn't a good look for Cristobal because they had won the game and he was kind of like calling Washington out. So I mentioned it in my column. It was like in the fourth or fifth paragraph. I said, you know, Thibodeau goes live in the locker room, all this stuff. I go back to my hotel in Seattle, and it's about 2 o'clock in the morning, and my phone rings, and it's Cristobal, and he's mad. He's like, he goes, we just had a great win, and that's the thing that you're going to focus on. That the, and I said, Mario, I said, put yourself in my shoes. I said, your player goes live from the locker room, broadcasting this speech in which you're calling out Washington. I said, at that point, I have to address it. Kayvon Thibodeau forced me to address it. I can't ignore it. Like, be like, let's pretend Mario didn't call the, you know, Washington out in the post game, whatever. And at the end of the call, he goes, okay, like, I guess I understand you have to do it. He goes, but I just wish it would have been more about us winning the game. And I said, Mario, you got enough people that are kissing your butt. You don't need me kissing your butt. And we end that. And, you know, like, he comes on this show, what, like a week ago? And the reason he's coming back on is because he felt like he was treated fairly. I picked up the phone. We had a conversation about it. We don't have to agree about it. What I don't like is Helfrich loses a game. I call him out. He hides out for 2 weeks. Like, and we never talk. And I never get a chance to be like, here's what I was thinking. Or he never gets a chance to go, hey, answer a question that's a hard question. Yet some guys are just not comfortable with it. They hear that noise louder than it is. So to Dan Lanning's credit, he's coming on the show. I think it'll be a productive, good conversation. That'll be at 4:20. I may subtly dabble around old stuff. I'm bringing up old stuff here, but the Hoosiers. Trent Walker coming on the show, the Oregon State wide receiver. We have to talk about it. We have to talk about the elephant in the room. How does he feel about Trent Bray? I'm going to ask Trent Walker. If he's on the hiring committee at Oregon State, what kind of coaches Oregon State, what do they need to hire? I want to see what he says to that. John Wilner will be with us coming up also in about 8 minutes from now. He'll be joining us at 3:24 if I get out to commercial break on time. Wilner will be here at 3:24. We'll talk about the college football weekend. Before I get to any and all that, can we tie a bow on the fan behavior thing, Stephen? Like yesterday, I thought we had a really good discussion about bad fan behavior and all that stuff, and I left the show thinking about it. I got a number of emails from people who said, hey, really smart show, really good conversation. I'm glad you guys are talking about it. Got me thinking about it. What did you leave the show thinking about yesterday?
Yeah, it made me start thinking, you know, is there, especially for me, like with a kid that's just turned 11 and then another one that has six, because I was heading out to the six-year-old soccer game after the show. Like, and I'm just thinking, like, is there anything that I can do or, like, if that situation arises at one of my kids' games, like, what am I going to do about it? Like, am I going to, like, you know, say something if I feel like it's get crossing the line? And then what line would that be if I actually say something? Be like, hey, you need to kind of just relax here. It's youth sports, all that kind of stuff. It made me think of, like, is there anything I could do actually personally in my life if stuff was to go down? Now, luckily, I haven't had an over-the-top situation, like kind of like the things that we've talked about going into yesterday with the refs and other parents and stuff like that. No fights have broken out on the sidelines between parents. But it just made me think, like, man, if something does go down, like, I should probably be prepared of, like, what I actually could do and what I could, you know, help with this situation. Because I do think it's one of those things where if you're not trying to help, you're not part of the problem, but you're just not doing anything to help it.
So what are you talking about? Like if fans and parents are out of control?
If fans or parents start yelling at the refs and like, okay, if they come onto the field or something, or like if they're just like, you know, getting after one of the kids, like if a coach just starts yelling at a kid or their, you know, parent starts yelling at their own kid because how they play, just anything like that. Like, I mean, we got to just kind of put it on the, I don't know. I just started thinking about all its different situations with youth sports, especially.
I agree that you should think ahead. Because I think one of the problems happens when you see something unfolding and then you go, I don't know. And then later you go, dang it, I wish I had done X, Y, Z to intervene. So I think it's good to think ahead. I've had a couple of things, not with the current like kids, the younger kids now, but with the older daughter. I had one parent who was really upset at like a 15-year-old official in a volleyball game. It was a kid who was a lines judge and missed a call, clearly missed a call. It was a bad call. The kid wasn't paying attention. This guy was losing his marbles, and his daughter's on the team. My daughter's on the team. And he was, like, literally shouting at the 15-year-old And he was off kind of pacing to himself off the side. I got up and walked over to him and I said, hey, I'll just make his name, you know, Rob. I said, hey, Rob. I said, you know, you got to remember that's a 15-year-old kid out there who blew that call. And he's like, I know. She messed it up. And I said, you know, imagine if that were your daughter or my daughter. We wouldn't want some parent yelling at him. And he goes, I know, John, I know. Like, he knew. And but my point was just let me just distract you and diffuse you a little bit so that you're not, like, making that 15-year-old want to, like, feel like she wants to crawl into a hole. Because really that's what happens is the kids, you know, they miss a call. It's a last lesson. Pay attention. You should be paying attention if you're officiating or umpiring or line judging. But those are kids. Those are, you know, like, let's keep it in context. I can't remember if we won that game or lost that game. And I bet Rob can't either. All right, we got a great show. John Wilner's coming up next. Punch It Audio still ahead. Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver. Dan Lanning, and he doesn't want to talk about you know what. Dan Lanning at 420. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Oregon is on the road at Rutgers. Oregon State at home against Lafayette. A lot of curious eyes on those two programs. How about Washington going to Michigan and Washington State going to Virginia? Here to talk about it all, John Wilner of the Bay Area News Group. You can read John Wilner on college football by going to WilnerHotline.com, or you can catch him on Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. He joins us every week on this show to talk about the college football weekend. And he is here. Wilner, where's your mind? Just right out of the gates. Where's your mind? Where are your eyes this weekend?
Oh, man, it's hard. This is one of the best weekends of the year, I think. And there's big games in all the major broadcast windows, which is great, too. We could go through the whole thing, but certainly my mind is on Provo and the Holy War. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of the Holy War. I think it's one of the best rivalries out there. And this one is, you know, real important in the Big 12. Both Utah and BYU are hoping to get in the conference championship game, and so the winner is going to be in pretty good shape.
Last year, you and I were there in Salt Lake City. It turned into a whodunit mystery at the end of the game with the officiating,
yeah.
And the Utah fans and players were not happy. Utah this year, they've looked really good, except not against Texas Tech. BYU is finding ways to win games. They're 6-0. They're at home. They are a 3-point dog at home in this one. Some of the Cougar fans are upset about it, but I get it. I kind of like Utah. Who do you like in the Holy War?
I kind of like Utah. I just think, you know, that is a tough environment for a freshman quarterback, mm-hmm. and that's what BYU has with Bear Bachmeyer. You know, he enrolled at Stanford last winter. He transferred to BYU when Stanford fired Troy Taylor. He's done very well, but he is a freshman, and this is going to be an intensity level he's never experienced before. Now, Devin Dampier at Utah is a transfer from New Mexico, but at least he's got some more experience in this whole thing. That, to me, is the biggest difference.
Wilner, Lafayette is going to Oregon State. Oregon State's 0-7. This game's on the CW, 7 o'clock Saturday. Rob Akey is the interim coach at Oregon State. He told me that he wants his players to see themselves succeed in front of God and everybody.
That it's really important, I think, and that's what we, you know, the coaching staff here, we want more than anything is for these kids to have an opportunity to smile. There hadn't been anything to smile about, and it was obviously a tough weekend in so many numerous ways, but being able to see them accomplish some goals and make something happen, make a play that they hadn't, and be able to celebrate together once they get done playing the game and feel good about what the results of that game were and be able to be rewarded for the work that's gone in because they've been busting their tails for a long, long time. And that means the world to everybody around here, and that's what drives us all here every day.
He's the anti-Trent Bray. He was very outspoken and interesting, former Idaho head coach. Lafayette going to Oregon State. If the Beavers don't win this one, they're not winning again. They're not winning in any place. But if they do win this one, maybe it gives them a little traction. Can they find another win or two down the stretch? What do you make of this game?
I certainly don't think from a personnel standpoint that Oregon State is outmatched in two games against Washington State.
Yeah.
Right? And then they also have, is it Sam Houston?
Sam Houston is bad. And then they have Tulsa, and then they have Lafayette. So they're, you know, can they find
personnel
two and a half
wins? They could win any of them.
Yeah.
I mean, they could win, beat any of those teams if things go right. It's not like they've got 0-7 personnel. That's the thing to remember. They're better than their record. They're not good, but their personnel is better than their record. So if somehow we see a change of culture and attitude like what is happening at UCLA, there could be a little bit of a post-Bray bounce, and they win this game, and maybe they beat the Cougars in the in Corvallis and Sam Houston State. Maybe they finish 3-9. Maybe they finish 4-8. I don't know, but it still was the right move to move on from Bray. There's no doubt about that.
Is there any scenario in which Rob Akey becomes a candidate in your mind for Oregon State head coaching, or is he just a stopgap and, you know, they've got bigger and more interesting things to do?
I cannot believe they would do that again, just promote from within,
yeah.
You know, moving an interim up like they did with Bray as defensive coordinator, replacing Jonathan Smith. They have to go outside. They have to get somebody new, new blood, somebody who has been a head coach before, who has proven they can win. It's just they have to minimize the risk of something going wrong to the greatest possible extent.
Oregon at Rutgers, 3:30 Saturday, Big Ten Network. Oregon's a 17-point favorite going across multiple time zones. Dan Lanning sounding a little irritated when he's asked about Indiana over and over. He's coming up on the show later today. But I like Oregon big in this one. I like him to bounce back, particularly because it's Rutgers. But what do you see?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a relatively easy win for the Ducks, even though they got to travel. Yeah, I saw Rutgers in person at Husky Stadium on Friday night. Their defense is terrible. I mean, it's one of the worst in the country. I think Oregon will have 40 by the start of the fourth quarter, and then it's just going to be a matter of whether Lanning leaves in the starters or pulls them. I can't imagine this game is going to be close.
Do they need to keep the starters in? Do they need a resounding comeback victory, or will it be enough to be 11-1 or 10-2 and just let your record speak for itself?
I don't think that they need to play the style points game in this game at this point in the season. I think maybe there may come a time in November when that is important, but I don't think it matters here. They shouldn't have any trouble. And whether they beat Rutgers 40-27 or 40-7, I don't think matters a long-term impact on their situation.
Washington State, a very respectable 3-3, a respectable loss last week in SEC country. Was encouraged by that. They go to Virginia. I don't even know if they came home. This game's on the CW at 3:30. Virginia's a 17.5-point favorite. I kind of like Washington State to keep that within the spread. I don't think they win the game, but I just like the way they've competed.
Yeah, that you can make the case that the loss at Mississippi was their best performance of the year, given the environment and the talent on the other side of the line of scrimmage. I was real impressed. I don't know if they can muster the same kind of effort. It's hard to do it 2 weeks in a row when you're on the other side of the country. And the other thing is the fact that they played Ole Miss so close will probably mean Virginia doesn't take them lightly.
Mm.
You know, Ole Miss was – they had the Cougars coming in, and then they were playing Georgia this week, right? So you know Ole Miss had one eye on the Bulldogs. I don't think Virginia is going to overlook Washington State after what just happened in Oxford. So, and Virginia's actually good. They're better than they've been. They beat Florida State. I think that the Cougs are in some trouble in this one.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group. Washington 5-1, going to 4-2 Michigan. It's an early game Saturday morning on Fox. You know, Michigan's played two decent opponents, USC and Oklahoma. They weren't close on either one of them, but Michigan is favored in this game. Washington beat them last year. Do you see Washington with another potential upset here? Or is this a game they can be in?
I think Washington's going to win. I think that Michigan is going to turn out to be not very good, like 7-5-ish, and mm-hmm. The Huskies are going to be 8-4, 9-3-ish. I think they're a little better. Michigan's offense is not that good. They got a freshman quarterback, very talented, but their offense isn't that good. And their defense is not what it has been in past years, which was elite. So I'm actually thinking that the Huskies can go in there and win this game. Now, not easy, 9 a.m. They did have one extra day to prepare and I think and get ready. I think that helps, right, because they played Rutgers on Friday night. But I just – this one just smells to me like it's going to be an upset. I don't have a great single – reason for thinking that. It's just one of those gut feelings.
I had the same thing. I picked Washington 28-21 over Michigan, and I thought when I saw the spread, I thought it was wrong. That is because I thought, gosh, that would be maybe a 1 or 2 point spread. You know, Michigan favored very slightly. Six. I think it opened at 7 and went to 6. Washington is 8th in the country against the run. Michigan can't throw the ball. So I just love this game for Washington. I think it lines up nicely if they don't suffer that traveling across multiple time zones hangover. And by the way, Washington 0-6 against the spread as a Big Ten visitor. That stat jumped out at me. But,
yeah.
I think I'm with you. I like Washington plus 6 in this one. I think they win the game outright.
Yeah, it is. You know, they have not played a very strong schedule. Rutgers is bad. Maryland's not really very good. Non-conference schedule was soft, right? They played one elite team. Ohio State is way better than Michigan. But Ohio State also beat them badly at home. Mm-hmm. And so now they're going up against personnel that is closer to Ohio State in a lot of ways than the teams that they have faced. But I think Washington is just going to come through with like a performance that makes us say, whoa, where'd that come from? Mm-hmm. Type of deal.
North Carolina, Bill Belichick, Friday night game, 7:30 Friday night on ESPN. Yeah, I think Cal's getting Belichick and Carolina at the right time. They've struggled on offense, Carolina has, but Cal's a 9.5 point favorite. What do you make of this game?
Yeah, I'm going to be there because I like to watch disasters unfolding. I think, well, from a betting standpoint, I'm a little wary. I don't think Justin Wilcox, Cal's coach, is very good as a big favorite. His teams tend to play down to the level of their competition. But I do think Cal will win the game. Carolina is bad. They don't have good players. They got 70 kids from the transfer portal, and they kind of misevaluated on a lot of them. They're just not talented. They did have a bye, so did Cal, and it's a long trip. I think Cal will win, but knowing the Bears and watching them over 9 years with Wilcox – you know, the games that should be easy never are with them.
Yeah, I think Carolina is going to struggle to score points. So I think if Cal can get to 28, they probably cover. But that is a if, and you're right. You've seen them up close, and you can't unsee what you've watched over the years from Cal. Finally, before I let you go, USC Notre Dame. Everybody wondering if this series will continue. We're watching these teams play in South Bend on Saturday on NBC. Who do you like in that USC Notre Dame game at 4:30?
I like the Irish, but I think USC has a good chance to cover.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good test for USC up front. Are they tough enough? Can they run the ball when they've got to run the ball? Can they tackle and contain Notre Dame's running game? Notre Dame's very good offensively, not great defensively. And I think USC's kind of similar. So it could end up being like 42-39 or something like that. I think it'll be very close. Ultimately, you know, I would bet on the Irish to make those couple of plays down the stretch that win the game. USC has not done a very good job winning close games under Lincoln Riley the last couple of years. So I think Notre Dame's going to win, but it should be pretty close.
John Wilner, you're the best. I appreciate you joining us. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you want to see my picks? You can go to johnconzano.com. I like the Ducks to cover. I like the Beavers to win, and that's all. Had a hard time finding a point spread for that game, but FanDuel has the Beavers as a 22-22.5 point favorite at home against Lafayette. Anybody who's seen Oregon State this year goes, hey, let's not worry about the point spread. Let's just see if Oregon State can win this game, a game they should win. They are better than their record. I agree with what John Wilner said, and I love the energy that Rob Akey's bringing in. I just think, you know, offensively, will they have the firepower to cover 22.5? Let's not even get into that, because the point for Oregon State is to win the game. That's the object of the game. Washington going to Michigan. You heard me talk with Wilner there. Michigan is a 6-point favorite in that game. I think that spread is upside down. I like Washington to win it. I'll take Washington State to stay within 17.5 of Virginia. I've seen enough of the Cougars to know that they will come to play. And USC Notre Dame, I agree with Wilner. I think Notre Dame in a closer than expected game on Saturday. Our big splash is coming up. Dan Lanning at 4:20. I want you here for it. You got the bald faced truth statewide.
Back to the bald faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I like it, DJ. Keep it coming. Mariners and the pivotal game 4 of their American League Championship Series will be tomorrow. Mariners dropped game 3. It was a bazillion to not a bazillion. They got blasted last night by the Blue Jays. It only counts for one, but I found it interesting that Mariners fans very quickly went from, well, we don't want to sweep it in 4. We want the team to be playing well, to get it over with. We do not want this
to drag out. Let's save the pitching staff, you know. Save that going on here. You want to hear a funny, crazy stat about that game last night, John?
Yeah.
The Mariners are the first team in Major League Baseball history to allow 18-plus hits, 13-plus runs, 9 extra base hits, 5 home runs, a home run in 4 consecutive innings, and throw 3 wild pitches all in the same game, regular season or postseason.
Wow.
So it was one of the worst games of all time history for any team.
Diehard Mariners fan texted me, mercy. It was like the 8th inning. He just said, mercy. It just counts for 1, though. So it's 2-1 in the best-of-7 series. Game 4 tomorrow in Seattle. We will have it right here on 750 The Game. Leads us to our big splash. It's college football-related.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be the big splash.
Well, Kurt Cignetti has a new contract, 8-year contract with Indiana. Will make him one of the highest paid football coaches in the country, with an annual average salary of $11.6 million a year. They were 10-2 last year and made the playoff. This season, they're 6-0, including a win over Oregon last weekend. Not that we're talking about it. Kurt Cignetti is going to be a Hoosier, it looks like, for the foreseeable future. He is 64 years old. He was the Big Ten Coach of the Year, the National Coach of the Year last year, and now Cignetti's got a new contract, and it is a contract that makes him well compensated for his duties. Is Indiana still a basketball school? That is a question I'm sure that is being debated in Bloomington, Indiana, right now on the radio. That brings us to Punch It Audio. We're going to move quickly here because we're leading you into Thursday Night Football. We still have Dan Lanning ahead. We still have Trent Walker ahead. Let's do it.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, the signing of Kurt Cignetti being celebrated in Indiana, Paul Feinbaum says is a terrible move.
Yeah, I mean, I frankly think this is a terrible move by Indiana. I know that the college football cognoscenti will disagree with me, but there is no way in the world that Kurt Cignetti should be the third highest paid coach in the country. He is not in Kirby Smart's league. He is not in Ryan Day's league. He has a big win on the road against Oregon. What else? I realize he may end up winning the national championship, and those who cover college football are very high on him. But this is not how you make sound decisions. This is how you take your university to the ledge and at some point end up paying for it.
That's Paul Feinbaum, SEC honk. I think a little bent that, you know, Cignetti's in SEC territory as it comes to coaching salary. The Big Ten conference schools have more money. And a possible equity deal coming down the pipeline.
He also went on to say he thinks this move will get the AD fired at Indiana eventually within 6 years.
Look, Cignetti's buyout was going to drop to $10 million on December 1st. That is now boosted up to $15 million under the new contract. He, in return, gets, you know, the contract's fully guaranteed, $93 million fully guaranteed on that. It helps him with the transfer portal. It helps him with recruiting. You know, for anybody who's going to, you know, the next month go, hey, Cignetti's leaving for another job, Indiana can say, no, he isn't. I think this is a good move. They found a guy who gets them to the top of college football. You want to stay at the top of college football, you got to pay the guy. Caleb Williams in the NFL talking about the criticisms that he faces. Here's the Bears quarterback.
Yeah, I could care less. It's kind of how I think I've said multiple times over my time being here. Fair, not. Life isn't fair. People are going to say what they have to say. We win, we lose. People have stuff to say. It was lucky, it was not lucky. People have stuff to say. Have a bad game, have a good game. You know, people have stuff to say. So it doesn't matter. We're only worried about what's going on here within this building and with these guys. So that's all I can say about that.
Do teams get lucky? Yes. Do players get lucky? Yes. You make your own luck, though. Troy Aikman calling that Bears touchdown a lucky play on Monday night. That call has led to Bears fans and players calling out Aikman.
As open as he is, and then you make one guy miss, and that was his speed. He's off to the races. So just some luck on Chicago's part. It really wasn't so much intended to be a pick.
Sometimes you're just lucky. I'd rather be lucky than good.
How soft are these players and fans that comment is like causing a riot in Chicago right now?
The Bears fans need to settle down. They're not mad at their team right now. They got to be mad at somebody. Washington's offense against Michigan's defense. Joel Klatt expects that to be one of the big matchups of Saturday.
DeMond Williams, their quarterback, he became the first player with 400 passing yards and 135 rushing yards in a game since Lamar Jackson. He did it against Syracuse in 2016. This guy can fly, man. He's a bit like Kyler Murray light. Really quick, short area quickness, throws the ball well when he's given protection, and they've got great playmakers on the outside. Really good ones. Denzel Boston, their wide receiver. Jonah Coleman, their running back. I like what I see from this Washington offense. Now, how will Michigan decide to spy or defend DeMond Williams remains to be seen. They can obviously watch Ohio State, who did an excellent job against DeMond Williams and Washington with their defense, but let's face it, it's defense. They don't have the length and speed in their linebacker core that Ohio State does.
Washington's defense is number 8 in the country against the run. Michigan hasn't really shown with consistency that it can pass the ball. I do think Washington's going to upset Michigan in Ann Arbor on Saturday. It'll be a mild upset. It's a 6-point spread. But I think Washington, unless the travel gets to him, I think Washington's in that game. I agree with John Wilner earlier. Steven, how do you see that game?
Yeah, I like Washington. Michigan, and it's more of a Michigan thing. Watching Michigan against USC last week, John, has raised lots of concerns because USC was down to their 4-string running back who was listed as out, wasn't even dressed at the start of the game, then ended up dressing, and he dominated Michigan. Like, Michigan got pushed around. I think we're overrating that Michigan defensive line and offensive line a little bit. We're thinking like it is in years past. It's not that. They're getting pushed around this year. So, yeah, I think Washington can go in there and win this game.
Stanford Steve loves the idea of Utah at BYU. Here's Stanford Steve from the Scott Van Pelt Show.
Plenty at stake. What do we got? Fourth time both teams in this rivalry are ranked in all since 1994. So there's not a lot of times this game has meant this much. We know how much they hate each other. Both head coaches went to BYU. Whittingham won a national championship when he was at BYU. And now he's the head coach of Utah and had a serious run in that state. So the hatred is real. I love genuine hatred. There's nothing better. But Utah feels verified being a road favorite here, seeing what they're up against.
I really like Utah in this game. I think Utah's battle-tested. I think Texas Tech, that manhandled them, as a playoff team. I think Utah is in that next tier in the Big 12. I think BYU is a little bit of a pretender. I think they've been really fortunate, as they were last week, in double overtime beating Arizona. I think they've been fortunate to be undefeated. They are at home. The Holy War is weird. It's a weird rivalry game with a lot of passion and emotion. But give me Utah on the road at BYU. I like that one.
I agree with you, but isn't this what Sataki's kind of done since he's got to BYU is win ugly? Like, he always just seems to win. So I'm with you. I think Utah's the more talented team. I would pick Utah. I think Utah should cover the spread. But, man, somehow BYU always wins. But in this game, Bear Bachmeyer, true freshman, I think it's going to be tough. I do think BYU is a little bit fraudulent, so I'll take Utah.
Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve talking here about the NFL Europe games. Are those real tickets sold?
We had the Broncos-Jets game, which was a calamity.
Oh,
13-11 was your final. Imagine the people in London. Is this proper football?
That game is awful every time. Who wakes up to watch that? Europe games ever end?
No, I don't like them.
Who does?
I don't know. I mean, again, if you're over in London, you're
I'm convinced they give them free tickets over there so they fill the stadium.
Imagine them sitting there watching that f***ing fiasco between the Jets and Broncos. They had to pay proper quid, and they're sitting there, and it's just that. And you want to tell them, I'm sorry, there are games that are better than this, but there's a decent amount that's kind of like this.
Imagine somebody telling them, the last time the Jets were in the Super Bowl, 69.
I'm sure they have some equivalent of some, you know.
Yeah, but why are they going to pay to go see that? They're not paying. They just walk in. The American fans that go over, got to go see the team. You're paying thousands of dollars to watch that.
We know why they're doing it. It's all about trying to expand audience into Europe and TV rights internationally. I do wonder about the fans at the stadium who, for a lot of games, they seem a little confused about when to cheer or what to cheer. Good stuff from Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve there. Trent Walker coming up, Oregon State wide receiver. Dan Lanning after. Be here for it.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I remember when they first gave me this radio show, and believe me, they gave it to me. I didn't deserve it. And I would interview like the Blazers general manager. We had Mike Tyson on the show one time. And I would look around and I'd go, man, like, this is great. We could just have a conversation on the show. The problem back in the day was I don't think I was very good at it. I think I've gotten better at it. I don't know. Our next guest, Dan Lanning, joining us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you, John?
I am well. I want to ask you about something that's been on my mind. Outback Steakhouse. Let's say you worked there when you were, I think you were in college, right? Was that one of your early jobs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm actually going to eat it later on tonight, believe it or not.
Are you really? You're going to the Outback? You can still go back?
Well, no, we're going to. So my family's figured out this thing called DoorDash that, we murdered. But so my wife and I, we celebrate our 16th wedding anniversary tomorrow. And it's that's kind of hard to celebrate during football season. So we both said, "Hey, how about Outback tonight?" So we're doing it here at the house. But a little bit Outback's gonna get. I think we're having Outback tonight. I hope we are. We'll see.
Or what do you order? What's your go-to order at Outback?
I'm a big fan of Kookaburra wings, and then when they do the prime rib, I like to get the prime rib seasoned and seared, medium rare. Mm-hmm. Get a ranch salad. Usually, I like the Cobb salad. I also like the blue chopped cheese salad. It's pretty good. And then probably a loaded baked potato. That's kind of my go-to.
Anybody who's ever worked in a restaurant setting has a great respect and appreciation when you go into a restaurant. Like, I have to think that both, because I think you and Sophia, you guys both worked at that Outback, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was a to-go girl. I was a server.
So that's nostalgia. Like, you're telling your kids, hey, you know, this is, we're having Outback, but this is why you don't exist if we don't work at Outback.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of, I think anybody in life, like, you need to work in the service industry at some point. Doesn't mean you have to work at Outback. Like, you have to work in somewhere where you're serving others, and like, you might do the most unbelievable job and you get stiffed on a tip, or you might do like an average job, averages grits, and somebody blesses you with a great tip. But you learn how to talk to people. You learn how to solve problems. Maybe the meal gets cooked wrong and you're the guy that has to address it. Like, I think there's a lot of real benefits to working in the service industry. And, it was super beneficial to me, in my life, the time that I got to do it. So something I definitely don't take for granted.
I love that. And I like that you're a medium rare guy. You know, I think anything more than medium is not really having a steak, right? You got to have.
Yeah. So, and it all depends on what I'm having. Like, if I'm having a filet, for me, a filet needs to be rare. You know, that's, you know, filet's rare. Anything with a little more fat in it, like a ribeye or a prime rib, like medium rare, so you can cook the fat through a little bit, marble it out. Okay. But yeah, that's kind of my. If it's brown inside, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, it's a mistake. You've overdone it. So are you a guy who will, in the off season, enjoy that? Do you like getting in the backyard? Do you have like a barbecue set up at your house?
Yeah, I love to cook. Yeah, I love to cook. I love to grill. And in the summer, when we're actually on vacation, I'm usually in charge of breakfast and dinner. Sophia kind of handles lunchtime, but that's usually the routine. I'm an omelet guy in the morning. I can cook a pretty good omelet. And then at night, we're usually doing steak or burgers or something like that.
I'm going to go to Outback. You've now convinced, I think, there's going to be a run on Outback. So Dan Lanning's ordering his anniversary dinner with Sophia. DoorDash. How do you feel about the grocery delivery? Let's see how far you go with the delivery thing. Do you do the grocery delivery? Yeah?
No, we haven't done that. I mean, I complain about DoorDash a lot. You know, I'm more the guy like, okay, you order it, I'll go pick it up. You know, I don't mind doing that, but I'm not always here. So it is what it is, right?
What kind of tipper are you on the DoorDash?
I'm pretty consistent, 20% regardless.
Do you feel like because people would know who you are, you better tip? Or how do you handle that? Because you do have eyes on
DoorDash name. I don't think our DoorDash name is a real name. I don't think. No. I don't know how that works.
You got a fake name? What's your fake name? What's your go-to fake name?
Well, I don't know where it is from my wife. My wife would order that. Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I truly believe she has something up different listed. You know, I don't know. But
yeah,
because
you never know. You never know who's delivering. You know, you could get some Washington.
I had a Beaver
fan
come over the other day. He was actually super nice. A DoorDash Beaver fan. They showed me her to say, man, wish you all the best of luck. And if you get bored cheering for the Beavers, you can cheer for us, you know.
There you go. See? There's some camaraderie. You know, not everybody, not everything has to be mean-spirited. You got Rutgers. People are going to kill me if I don't talk about Rutgers. Everybody gets mad if I don't talk about Rutgers. Let me ask you this. I've been watching a little Rutgers. Their defense is struggling. They got guys in man coverage in that Washington game that just fall down. And I if I'm Greg Schiano, I'm going crazy, going, hey, we schemed this up. Guy just falls down. When you're a coach and that happens on film, you just got to – what do you do?
If I'm sitting in man coverage and my guy falls down?
Yeah, you're in man coverage, guy's in position, it's the right call, your guy just falls down.
Yeah, it's all risk assessment. Like, that's what's great about the game. What works on paper isn't necessarily the truth, right? Like, you got to go execute. So I always feel like the next play is the most important play in those moments, and there's going to be some error on either side of the ball at times, and you just hope you're prepared enough for those moments that it doesn't happen to you.
You probably had some guys that make you look really smart, too. Like, maybe you're not in quite.
Oh, we've had some really bad calls. Yeah, we've had some really bad calls that all of a sudden look like unbelievable calls, and it was, you know, players making unbelievable plays. Yeah, I've been on both ends of that, for sure.
What popped into your head when you said that? Because when you say I was in a, you know, maybe you're in the wrong call, and it should be a big play for the offense, but a guy just makes a sensational play because he's a great athlete.
I mean, there's a ton of moments. I mean, immediately I go back to last week, but we didn't win that game last week. But there's a third down moment where we were aggressive on defense and ended up making a great play on a play that would have been really tough if you would have just drawn up on paper and said it was going to be a good one.
Last week,
I wasn't
even going to bring up last week because you sounded like you were all irritated about talking about last week.
Oh, no. Look, man, it's the reality. Isn't that the job I signed up for? Aren't you supposed to, you know, hit that? Isn't that somewhere on your docket that you're supposed to ask about? Here's my thing. Like, I do think the people that sit in the media room every single day, and I've talked about it, you know, Saturday after the game, you talk about it again on Monday, and then we're playing a team that I think is very capable and a good team, like, at some point, that team deserves the respect of getting a couple questions about the game we're about to play, right?
Yeah, at some point, you got to move on. It's like having lunch with a friend who's going through a bad relationship, and that's all they talk about is the bad relationship. Like, at some point, you gotta evolve the conversation to the next thing. just one thing looking back, you know, you've said, hey, they had a better plan. Drill down on that. Like, if you go back, is it schematically something with the offensive line, defensive line? What was the thing that kind of kept you up on Saturday night?
Yeah, you know, ultimately, I felt like, I think I said this, I felt like they had the pen last, and we have a team that's super capable if we give them the answers to get us in the right play, to get us in the right opportunity, and we just didn't do that enough on Saturday. And then there were some things we walked away from that were really successful for us that we should have tried more. And then, you know, in the fourth quarter, you got to go win the fourth quarter, and you're talking about a tie game in the fourth quarter. And they imposed their will a little bit more than we did. And if you went and played that all back over again, like what a learning opportunity, you know, to say, okay, how could we do this different? And just losses aren't worth it if you don't learn the lessons, right? And if you learn the lessons, it can be really effective.
I think there's a recalibration too with the length of the season. We saw it last year with Ohio State. It's a long season, and there's a lot of there's valleys, there's peaks. And I felt like Indiana, I watched those guys on the field after the game. That game, winning that game against you guys meant a lot to them. And I've seen your guys like that. In fact, 2 weeks earlier at Penn State, your guys were that way. But it is, how hard is that emotionally to stay up? And, you know, because it's draining every week, isn't it?
Well, that's what we all signed up for. And the emotional highs and lows of the game are super intense. But that's part of what makes college football so great.
This week, offensive line, I got to think the offensive line took it personally when they watched film from last week. What do you expect, or what are your expectations from your offensive line this week against Rutgers?
Yeah, I'm anticipating these guys have a good performance. They put in, you know, it's been a really good week of work, really good week of prep. I think our coaches have done a good job of the preparation necessary for this game. And all those things, when sacks happen, everybody always looks at the offensive line. And the reality is it very easily could have been a wideout running the wrong route and the quarterback's ready to throw it to him and he's not there. Or it could have been the quarterback moving the pocket when he's not supposed to move the pocket. Or the O-line, maybe they do idea protection and they execute the protection the right way, but we got the wrong guy on the wrong matchup. So they usually wear it when it goes well, and they usually wear it when it goes, you know, goes poorly. But I do feel good about our prep this week. I do feel good about our plan.
Yeah, I thought maybe your back missed a couple of assignments on, that resulted in sacks. But I don't know. I don't know what you guys were calling there. And I thought, Dante's eyes, you know, he had been really good at, you know, staying, looking comfortable. He did not look comfortable last week. I guess that comes with protecting him. And because I thought you had some guys wide open, he just didn't have time to see him, or he couldn't get his eyes up.
Yeah, and goes back to our preparation as coaches. I mean, look at you, man. You went from, I'm not going to ask a question about it, to like, let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
We drilled. Look, think about what we've talked about. We've talked about Outback Steakhouse. We've talked about tipping. We've talked about DoorDash. You know, we can do this all day, but
When's your anniversary, by the way, John? Like, when did you get married?
I am a summer guy, summertime guy. So that's,
good for you.
You know, yeah. I as a football coach, wait a minute. So you have, did you get married during football season? But that was well before you were coaching, right? Like that's.
Well, I was coaching. No, I was coaching, but I was coaching high school football. But so when we got engaged on Easter, and I was kind of the guy that, like, when I got engaged, I was like, let's get married. Like, let's go ahead and get married now. And my wife is like, well, let's do this summer wedding. It's going to be awesome. And it's like, wait, so we're going to be engaged for more than a year? and then there was this little young guy named Caden that was coming along. And we said, let's speed this up so we can explain it to grandma. Yeah. And so we got married during football season.
Okay.
That's kind of how it worked out.
I love it. All right. So you guys were going to travel out. You're not obviously not there. So you're leaving tomorrow. You're doing that same thing you did. I think you did it in the Northwestern game. Same plan, get out.
Really,
right?
more so the Penn State game. Northwestern, we actually went a day early.
Okay.
But this is a little bit more of our format for the Penn State game because it's a night game tomorrow.
Yeah. By the way, that trip out of Penn State, not to dwell, that was kind of a slog getting out of there. That's not an easy place to go. You guys went to Harrisburg after the game. You had to bus out. I had to do the same thing. I don't think I even went to sleep after the game. Like, I just flew at 6 a.m. the next morning. Yeah. That's not ideal. We got to do something about that.
No.
Maybe I get
not
on the team.
Idea. We got to get a bigger. We got to get a bigger runway there in State College for sure.
I need a seat on that charter on the way home next time you go there. That's what I'm thinking. It took me forever to get back. I missed a whole day. I made it. You know what I did, though? I made it to my 9-year-old soccer game. She had a soccer game at 11 a.m. I landed. I was there. She scored a goal. I saw it. It was like a win for dad. I was like, okay, I'm a good parent now for all the things I miss. You miss things, too, though. Your kid plays in the band. Your kid plays in a sport. How do you deal with the stuff that you miss?
Yeah, it's hard, man. It's hard, but again, it's part of, you know, and to me, it goes back to honor and the sacrifice that your family makes for you to get to do what you want to do. And if I'm not going to be there, then that means I better be working my tail off to make it worth it. And it'll never be worth it. You can't ever go back and be a dad again. But I do think there's other lessons that my family gets to learn from the way that we work. And if you work really hard, you know, you can accomplish a lot and be unbelievably blessed, but there's sacrifice that comes along with that. So I think even though you're maybe missing the lesson of getting to be there and all those moments and all those opportunities with your kids, you're also teaching a lesson of, hey, if you want to accomplish some things, that there's going to be some sacrifices along the way. And I've been really fortunate to have a family that understands that and receives it really well.
I am looking around college football, and there's not a lot of patience for head coaches. And, you know, the guys are losing games, and all of a sudden their job's in jeopardy, and guys that played, you know, in the semifinals last year are out of a job. And what do you make of the just, you know, and people have a hard time feeling sorry because of the money that's out there. And, you know, you coaches are paid well. Okay, that's part of it. But there's just a real lack of patience with coaches. What do you make of that as you look around your industry?
Do you think I'm on the hot seat, John?
You're not on the hot seat, but I'm just saying, you know,
but James. I'm only 2 weeks away, right? That's how it works. That's the world we live in.
That's it.
You know what? I don't feel bad for head coaches that are in my position. Like, we know who we're signed up for. What's hard is my three kids didn't sign up for that. My wife didn't sign up for that. And what's harder is, there's 70 other people on that staff or 50 other people on that staff that aren't in the same situation that I'm in. So fans deserve, fans want, and there's accountability that comes along with our profession, especially when people are taken care of the way they're taken care of. But there's so many people that fall into that, that part of that puzzle that didn't sign up for it to play out the way it did, you know, and that's the part that's rough. And it's just part of what we sign up for. And again, I'm good. We signed up for it. So I'm in a good situation, but I feel for that quality control assistant that all of a sudden doesn't have a job anymore. And he has a wife and kids too. And it doesn't maybe look the same for him, or that freshman that signed up to go play for a coach and he's gone now. But this is college football. It is what it is. And, you know, you hope you're always on the right side of it, and you work really hard to hope that you're always on the right side of it, but it just doesn't always work that way.
But I just remember last year, you know, you guys beat Ohio State, and the Ohio State fans, they wanted Ryan Day. And then he lost to Michigan.
And everybody was ready to see him out of town, and his family had to deal with, you know, some real craziness. Then he goes on to win a national championship. So, obviously, he's an unbelievable coach. They got a great team, and it didn't go their way a couple times last year. That's the way it goes. It's hard, man. And everybody has a hard job. You know, Rob Mullins has a hard job. Like the ADs across the country, they have a hard job because they have an inordinate amount of pressure as well that they deal with. And they want results, and you pay for results, and you expect teams to have a lot of success. And it just doesn't always work that way. But when you have people that are motivated and they understand what they signed up for and they go attack problems and say, we're going to go fix problems, you know, a lot of times it works out. And I don't know, there's a lot of coaches that we can look at and say, hey, patience was worth it, right? Like if you were patient and you let it play out and you saw what happened, you had a lot of success. But I bet you there's just as many examples of why did we wait so long, right? So it's a hard game. It's a hard game to play. Luckily here, I believe in the people that we have here. We have some, you know, unbelievable people. Our players, I had a player say to me today that was at another program before. He said, Coach, I've never seen a team like practice like that after they lost. You know, everybody's feeling sorry for themselves. And it's like, we don't have time for that, right? Let's go to work. So I think a lot of that has to do with your culture. What's the environment that you've created? and what's your team, what's the standards of your team, and then, you know, you go attack and give it the best effort you got every single day, and you control what you can control and see where that goes.
When I was in college, I worked at a number of pizza parlors. I also had a job at Marie Callender's, you know, the pie place. And I can tell you, let's say, you know, the Dan Lanning, you're in charge of the entire section at Outback Steakhouse. Somebody called in sick.
Yeah.
And you've got tables going. They're seating new tables. They're picking. That chaos probably prepares you for the stuff you're dealing with now, because you got it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that multitasking.
It's fun, isn't it? Like, in those moments, you're stressed out, but afterwards, you're like, look what we just did, right? Like, we got all of our food out on time, right? Everybody's drinks were full the entire night. Nobody's waiting for their check. Like, that's a good feeling. And maybe you put a smile on somebody's face during the process.
You hit on something there. Half the battle is making sure that the glasses are full. Refill the water. Refill the iced tea.
Yeah.
Can I get you something else? Check back to the table. Check back. Just checking back. Hey, everything great? You know, and not is everything okay? Is everything great? There's a big difference.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Yeah. All right. You can go now. I think we've covered it all. Dan Lanning, happy anniversary.
Appreciate you, brother. Have a great one. Thanks,
all right.
John.
All right. There he goes off to have his DoorDash Outback Steakhouse. Steven, he tips the DoorDash driver, although they don't let him know that it's Dan Lanning's house. So
I thought that was what but he owned it, though. He's like, look, my wife's in charge of this, but he can't have his name out there. There's too many crazies out there.
Yeah, you got to have a level of protection.
I'll say this though. I was shocked he didn't mention the Bloomin' Onion, man. That's like the Outback go-to. No Bloomin' Onion mentioned at all.
Well,
I had to go back and check
I think you have to take that under consideration, that that was intentional.
Right. Like, now if I go back to Outback, I'm not getting the Bloomin' Onion. Like, there's something wrong with it.
And that Bloomin' Onion, that's like an onion ring out of control. Is that what it is?
Yeah. With some fire sauce. It's really, it's really pretty good. I can't believe you mentioned it.
I thought that was a really strong interview. We touched on Indiana without touching on Indiana. See how I did that? And then we moved it into Rutgers. He didn't want to talk too much about them falling down on defense. They have not been good on defense. I think Oregon is going to blow out Rutgers, and I think it'll all be about the offense. They'll get 40-plus on offense. They'll get as many as they want on offense. They could get 50 if they want to. I think Rutgers was good for about 14 or 17 points in this game. So I'll call it like 42-14 Oregon, and I think it could be uglier if Oregon wants it to be uglier. I think it'll be a real bounce back. And happy anniversary to Sophia and Dan. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, Steven, check the tape. Dan Lanning did not mention the Bloomin' Onion. That surprised you, huh?
Shocked and surprised, because that's like what they're known for.
I was a little surprised that he goes a straight 20%. Making what he's making. Did that surprise you a little bit?
No, I actually liked it, because a straight 20%, even if you're bad, he's still going to give it out. Like, he understands that a lot of people that are, you know, working for tips, they need it. And so I think he's very understanding of that. I didn't mind that answer.
I thought he would go higher. I think maybe tip a little higher. Maybe, you know, because people, Dan Lanning, what did he tip? He only gave me 20%.
But they don't know it's Dan Lanning. That's the thing.
Well,
they're door dashing, and, it's Land Danning.
I heard this one time. Joel Prisbilla, the former Blazers center, Joel Prisbilla's wife handled all their finances. And so I talked to Prisbilla one time. It was in the Blazers locker room. It was an interesting conversation. It happened to be a conversation between Quintel Woods and Prisbilla that I was just happened to be standing there. And Prisbilla was explaining the league's 401k to Quintel Woods. And Prisbilla was saying, you do the 401k, right? Like, you know, this is a conversation that could happen in any locker room at any gym in America. And you do the 401k, right? And Quintel was like, what is that? And Prisbilla was like, well, it's a tax-deferred retirement plan. And he said, you know, here's the thing about the 401k. And I think at the time, the limit the annual contribution limit was like $10,000 or $10,200 or something like that. And Prisbilla said, you know, it's a free $10,000. And then that caught my attention because I said, what do you mean a free $10,000? And Prisbilla said, well, because a lot of employers do a match. Some employers will do, you know, 1% match, or they'll match 100% up to 4%, you know, or they'll do a 5% match, or, you know, it just depends, like, you know, how generous your employer is. And the NBA, get this, the NBA does a 100% match of 100%. So they basically, if you know, your 401k contribution limit for that year was $10,000, it's now gone up much higher. I think the limit for the 2025 tax year is $23,500. So let's just apply that to this year. Shaedon Sharpe, if he participates in the NBA's 401k plan, he can contribute up to $23,500 of his salary to the 401k. The league will match it 100%. They will put in $23,500. So Prisbilla was telling Quintel, hey, it's a free $10,000. Like, why wouldn't you do it? And Quintel was going, yeah, but I have to put the $10,000 in there. And Prisbilla was saying, no, you get to keep that $10,000. You just get it back at retirement age, and the league will match it. You should do this every year. And then I said to Prisbilla, I said, you know, you should be a financial planner in here for these guys. And he said, well, actually, he goes, my wife is the one who got to that. And then Prisbilla's whole thing, and you've seen athletes that do this. I think, you know, Gronk said that he only spends his endorsement income. He doesn't, you know, all of his base salary goes into a financial planner, and, you know, that money gets invested. He lives off his endorsements. Shohei Ohtani has a similar thing, although his contract is heavily deferred. But Prisbilla's whole thing was his wife and he lived very modestly by NBA standards. Like, they lived in like a really nice house or whatever, but they weren't like buying a bunch of Escalades and, you know, jewelry and buying a house that was well above their means that they were going to have a hard time getting out of if they left the market. Like, all the financial decisions were made by her. So when Dan Lanning's saying that Sophia is handling the DoorDash, I think that's pretty good. I was a little surprised they don't do grocery delivery. Where do you stand on grocery delivery?
Oh, we do grocery delivery. I mean, it's a pain in the butt to have to, like, if you're by yourself and you have to do grocery shopping with the kids, yeah, it's impossible. Yes. And so, I'm all for it. I'm all for delivery services. My problem is I don't want to spend so much extra just to get things delivered. Like, I'm willing to go get my own food. I'm willing to go to the grocery store as long as I don't have to pay like a huge fee on top of it. But no, we definitely get, you know, groceries delivered. Well, you know, Amazon delivers all the stuff to us, and we got all the delivery stuff.
Let's not say it's impossible to go to the grocery store. My mom and your mom did it with kids, right?
I remember going to the grocery store when I was a kid, breaking things in the aisle, and my mom's like, we got to get out of here. Like,
but let's not say it's impossible, but I understand that in today's world.
I'll say this. For me, Stephen Vaughn, it's impossible to go with two kids.
I know there are parents listening who are like, what are they saying? It's impossible. I did it for 30 years. Don't call us. We got you. We understand. This is like a little bit like this is a little bit like NBA players complaining about travel. You know what I mean? So, like, LaMarcus Aldridge was in the Blazer locker room one time, and he said, you know, I'm really tired. We've been traveling. And I looked at him and I was like, you're staying in 5-star hotels. You're ordering room service. You're on a chartered flight. Let's not get carried away. And then he goes, you know what I mean? Like, I'm tired. And I go, I understand you're tired, but let's not pretend that, you know, his mother was a bus driver. Let's not pretend that this is like your mom coming home after driving a bus with 80 kids on it for 6 hours. Let's not pretend that's a different kind of fatigue. Okay, let's try to be realistic about it. What'd you think of the Lanning interview? Because I tried to, my whole goal there was to get him to talk a little bit about Indiana, but also I want to do a different interview. And so I started with the Outback Steakhouse, which ended up leading us into this anniversary talk. And, you know, what'd you think of Lanning?
Yeah, I thought he was good as always, and he's very engaging. I think I've said this lots of times. I'm not a huge Duck fan, but I am a big Dan Lanning fan. Like, he is very likable and comes across very likable in all of his interviews. I thought his take on working in a service industry, how that it can help you out for life, is such a big thing. And, you know, he comes from those humble beginnings, right? Like, he talks about how he's getting married when he's a football coach. Well, that's probably, like, it's not a regret. Obviously, he wants to be married. It's probably a regret, like, when the day was. Like, he probably doesn't want it nowadays because he wants to actually celebrate it, but he can't. And I don't know. I love the guy. I think he's an excellent speaker when he talks to people. But I'll say this. When he talked about the Indiana loss, John, it seemed like there he didn't say it, but he made it seem like there were some opportunities out there for Oregon to make some plays and be even closer in that ballgame. He talked about finishing in the fourth quarter. They had Indiana in a couple, you know, third downs, and they couldn't get off the field. I think he probably watched that film and said, look, man, we're better than that team. We should beat that team later on. We got to just clean up some of these mistakes.
Isn't that what Ohio State said last season, you know, when Oregon beat them at Autzen Stadium?
It could very well be true.
Yeah. I don't want to say they lost a game on purpose, because I don't think they did. But I don't think it's necessarily in the overall journey of Oregon's season. If Oregon goes to the playoff and Oregon meets Indiana again in the playoff and beats Indiana, I think we're going to look back and go, look at this. This was part of the journey, and look what Oregon learned from that loss, as Lanning said that. I also think he's running some cover for his players, because he keeps saying stuff like, they had a better plan, we got out-coached. I think his players didn't play as hungry or as hard or as effectively as Indiana players did. I think those Indiana players, that game meant something to them. And I kind of wonder if the Oregon players playing at Penn State 2 weeks earlier, having a bye week, coming into this Indiana game, they've been favored. Look at us. I think it was a big game, but I think Indiana was playing like that this was their Super Bowl. You see them after the game, the players were on the field, standing at midfield. They didn't want to go home.
For how important the Oregon win was at Penn State, same thing for Indiana at Oregon. They viewed it the same exact way.
The fans from Indiana came out of the stands onto the field. The band came onto the field, and the players were on the field. And they were all standing at midfield at Autzen Stadium, and everybody was going home except Indiana.
For over 45 years.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
This has been a fantastic show. I hope you grab a podcast of it if you missed hour one. John Wilner was with us. We talked about the college football weekend. Trent Walker, Oregon State wide receiver, joined us at 4 o'clock. Candid. Outspoken. Steven, you heard him. He's mad. He's mad about Trent Bray getting fired.
He really is, yeah. He's upset that happened. And he's not the only Beaver. There are other Beavers, past and present, I think we're not happy about the decision. I did find it interesting, though, John. He talked about some of the effort problems that we've talked about all season. He mentioned it on this show right here. Like, hey, man, some of the guys aren't giving full effort, aren't buying in.
He also told me off air as we went to commercial break. Said he wants to talk to me. He said some of the things that have been put out there by other players, he says he doesn't read that the same. And I'll be curious to see what comes of this. Is Oregon State's trying to hire a new coach, and there seems to be a little bit of disharmony among the stakeholders. And again, Scott Barnes wants to form a committee. Would he put a current player on the committee? Would he put somebody like Trent Walker on the committee? That would be a really interesting move. See how that goes. We've got the five biggest stories in sports. One of them, I think, is, if I have Steven read correctly, one of them is going to be really sad. So stay tuned for that. We're going to lead you right into Thursday night football. Tomorrow, the bald-faced truth is going to get knocked out by Mariners baseball. So, you know, I want the Mariners to keep winning. But one of the byproducts of the Mariners continuing to win is occasionally, if their game times for the American League Championship Series and potential World Series line up with this show, they will preempt this show. So we'll do our best. You always know you can find me on social media at John Canzano BFT on Twitter, at John Canzano on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook. And you know where to find me, johncanzano.com in print. But we'll get you all caught up, and hopefully the Mariners can win it all, and we'll have a lot to talk about. All right, Steven's got the 5 at 5. Let's do it.
The 5 at 5. Number 1.
Yes, you talked about it there. University of San Francisco Athletic Director Larry Williams, he has passed away this morning on campus. He was working out, had a heart-related incident, probably a heart attack, I would assume. I don't know that for sure. You probably know more than I do. But Williams, 62 years old. He was a former AD at the University of Portland, Marquette, and Akron. He played football at Notre Dame and the NFL. But sad day there on the campus of the University of San Francisco. Larry Williams, their athletic director, passes away.
Yeah, I heard this from a source at USF this morning, and then I verified it. But apparently Larry Williams, who, you know, he's a big, tall guy. He obviously played in the NFL. He obviously played at Notre Dame. I remember him at the University of Portland. You know, when he got hired, it was a tough time and a tough job, and he engineered a lot of the that time for the Pilots successfully and kind of bridged the gap to this current era. But he apparently was in the workout room. They believe it was a heart attack. They're calling it a heart-related incident, but I believe it was a heart attack. He was working out by himself, and they found him non-responsive and don't know how long he was there. And, you know, thoughts to his family, prayers for him and his family. Larry Williams, too young. Obviously, if you are somebody in your 50s or 60s and you're working out, make sure you get a physical. Not saying that was the issue, but 62 years old, way too young. Former AD at University of Portland, Marquette, and Akron. Larry Williams, dead at the age of 62.
Number two.
Well, Indiana, John, they are officially a football school as they have signed their head coach, Kurt Cignetti, to a new eight-year deal worth $11.6 million per year. So Cignetti will not be going to Penn State or Florida or anywhere like that. He is staying with the Hoosiers. This makes Cignetti the third highest paid college football coach in the nation, right behind Ryan Day, who makes $12.6 million, and then Kirby Smart, who's at $13.3 million. Cignetti right behind them. Now, Cignetti had been making $8.3 million before in his other contract, so it's a bump of about $3 million a year. But I guess when you win at Oregon, at Autzen, and the rain and the wind and all that, you get a new contract. So good for Kurt Cignetti and Indiana.
Well, it raises his buyout to $15 million, you know, for them to get out of it. But the money owed to him, more than $90 million owed to him. The top college football buyouts: Kirby Smart, $105 million. Kalen DeBoer at Alabama, $61 million. Steve Sarkisian, $60 million. Ryan Day, $70 million. We all know James Franklin at Penn State was $49 million. There's a lot of money out there. I thought it was interesting what Dan Lanning had to say kind of about the lack of patience and, you know, nobody feels sorry for the coach, but you feel sorry for the support staffers. You feel sorry for the strength and conditioning coach or the analyst who's, you know, making a more modest salary and has got a family as well. Tough thing for a coach and obviously a staff.
Number three.
Well, James Franklin was fired at Penn State. People thought Cignetti might go there. He won't. But James Franklin obviously fired. But ESPN has announced that James Franklin will appear on College Game Day this week interview. Just 6 days after being fired as the head coach of Penn State. Now, he'll be on the Game Day crew, which is at Georgia this week in Athens between the matchup between Ole Miss and Georgia, the SEC showdown. Not surprising they're there. But Kirk Herbstreit, he's already said publicly that Franklin would be a, quote, natural fit for television. So he'll get his, I guess, his live audition right there, maybe. I don't know. Nobody knows exactly what the interview is going to be, but he will be there. And Franklin, of course, you know, he's looking for things to do now that he got a buyout of approximately $48.7 million. John, that averages out to $20,000 per day for the next 6 years. So Franklin, you know, got to figure something to do, and he'll be on College Game Day on Saturday.
Get him on the show.
That's what they said. I feel like maybe I need to get Trent Bray on the show, you know? How about we do that? Are we on to four?
We are.
Man, it's moving fast.
Number four.
It's like you're reading my mind on that. We got some Oregon State coaching rumors, John. Trent Bray fired, but Pete Nakos of On3 Sports, he is putting out a name that I thought was very interesting. Here's his quote from his article today. He said, a source told On3 this weekend that former LSU coach Ed Orgeron is interested in the job, having had some communications with individuals around Oregon State. Now, Orgeron has publicly stated that he wants to get back into coaching, and he's open to moving out to the West Coast. Of course, Orgeron won a national title at LSU with that team in 2020. maybe, you know, maybe the best college football team of all time with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson. So many pros on both sides of the ball. But, you know, you talked about Oregon State probably not going to hire someone to, you know, around Thanksgiving, maybe after the season. But is Ed Orgeron, have you heard anything about that name? Because that's a name that's being thrown around. Beaver fans getting a little excited, I think, about it.
This is one of the things that agents do and coaches do to get themselves involved in searches. I know when Oregon had openings after Willie Taggart and after Mark Helfrich, what happened? My phone rang. Mike Leach was going, well, hey, would they hire me? You know, like there was a lot of coaches who like to increase their job security or get their name back out there because they want another bite of the apple. Ed Orgeron wants another bite of the apple. He doesn't want to come to Corvallis and coach, but if that beats him having to show up at high school games and sit there and look like someone's grandpa, he'll do it. I think Orgeron is just going to be the first of many names that you hear from guys that want that third or fourth or fifth chance. And I don't like it. He's been out too long. I think that the game has changed dramatically in the last 2 or 3 years with NIL and the portal. I would be really... I'd be really surprised if Ed Orgeron was a serious candidate at Oregon State.
Number five.
Well, we do got Thursday night football. It is the Steelers at the Bengals, but you know, we'll be preemptive for that. We also got the ALCS game 4, Max Scherzer versus Luis Castillo. Blue Jays and Mariners. Of course, the Blue Jays dominated the Mariners in Game 3, so that's actually a series now, 2-1. Mariner fans feeling a little bit. We also got the NLCS on right now, so another busy night in sports. Do the Mariners, they need this win? Yeah, because it's a 2-3-2 format in the in the CS. So if they lose one more, they have to go back to Toronto. Is this a situation where Mariners need to get these two at home and just end it and not have to risk going back to Toronto? Yeah,
the answer is yes. Like, you always want to get those wins and get them as much as you can. But, you know, it would be great if they end this series in Seattle and get a chance to sit down and rest a little bit. Last night's game was jarring, I think, for Mariners fans. But this is baseball. It's any given day in baseball. You're only as good as your last game in baseball. The fact that they're up 2-1 is a huge advantage. If I had told Mariners fans, hey, after 3 games, you're going to be ahead 2-1, you would have thought they split in Toronto and they got the first game
Mariner
in Seattle.
Mariners fans are acting like they're down 2-1.
I know. They're trailing. They're acting like that it's a must-win game 4. So, and I understand it because you don't want to go like, oh, it's 2-2 and now you got to go back to Toronto and win. But you just won twice in Toronto. I think the Mariners still have the better team. I think they're going to win this series. And I think it's going to happen in 6 games, Steven. I think they're going to have to go back to Toronto to win. But I think they'll split the next 2. They'll go back, and I don't think it'll go to 7. But what a luxury it would be to go back to Toronto with a 3-2 lead. So that's what the Mariners need to do. All right, leave it here. Thursday Night Football is coming up. We will catch you on Monday. You can find me at johnconzano.com in the meantime.